Good afternoon, everybody. The time is now 1 PM and this hearing is restarting. Please could a member of the case team confirm I can be heard clearly and that the live streaming and recording restarted?
Yeah, I can confirm you can be heard clearly and the live stream slash recording has now started. Thank you.
Thank you. Please can I remind all parties to keep your microphone muted, camera off until we invite you to speak. Each time that we invite you to speak, please give your name and on whose behalf you are speaking. Thank you. So this is the resumption of issue-specific hearing two, and we are at item seven on the agenda, quality. We are running to schedule and hope to complete air quality. Then potentially have a short break, depending on the progress we make. And address other specific issues under item eight. So air quality, there has been quite a bit of interest in air quality, number of submissions. We will, on this occasion, be inviting any general comments from interested parties towards the end of this section. So the intention is to go through the agenda to get responses from the named parties in the agenda to the points that are raised, then to take any other contributions at the end of item seven. So if anybody wants to prepare to make a short statement, then there's a little time to do that. Those statements will, on this occasion, be limited to 2 minutes. Air quality. So, study area, baseline conditions, overall methodology. The first question in relation to climate change implications for air quality. So, the applicant at deadline two suggested that any adverse changes to air quality as a result of climate change would be outweighed by a beneficial shift to electric vehicles. Would the local authorities like to comment on the applicant's response? And can I start with Tameside this time, please?
Simon Eastwood, Tameside. One thing to say is it's going to depend on the take-up of electric vehicles, both private ones, goods ones, passenger service vehicles, etc. And that's a bit of an unknown quality, really.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for that. That's helpful. Derbyshire County Council, please.
Sorry, Steve Buffery, Derbyshire County Council, sir. Colleagues at High Peak Borough Council are going to cover air quality matters for us this afternoon. Thank you.
Fine, that's clear. Thank you very much. High Peak Borough Council, please.
Right, James, High Peak Borough Council. I'll hand over to my colleague Dan McCrory, who will lead on air quality.
Thank you.
Yeah, pretty much I would agree with what my colleague said. Essentially, the effects on climate change in this context will entirely depend on the uptake of electric vehicles and weather. It probably was a question that snuck in by the applicant, to be fair to them. It was more like a comment, I think, that seemed to me when I read it, a sort of an add-on at the end, really, in terms of its significance.
So this isn't something that's a pressing concern to...
Well, it comes into the whole holistic approach towards climate change, really, rather than perhaps specific to the air quality issues, if you like.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. We'll leave it at that. There is the moment. So next, two questions are in relation to the consideration of terrain. In response to a question, the applicant said that adjustments for terrain have been made in accordance with DEFRA guidance. And there's a reference to adjustments being applied when the difference between modelling and monitoring was greater than 25%. So there have been representations made about whether sufficient consideration be given to terrain. Example.
You should be on there, but the maximum 10 causes camera.
I don't know who spoke there. Let me continue. There'd been some concerns raised about allowances for heavy duty vehicles, for example, travelling uphill through Tin Twistle as one example. There are obviously other steep slopes in different parts of the study area and beyond. So there's just an initial question as to, could the applicant perhaps explain a little bit more about the allowance made for terrain? There was a suggestion of if there's a 25% variance, then it was considered explicitly. I wonder if that could just be explained a little bit more so that we can understand when allowances for terrain haven't been made. So over to the applicant, please.
Thank you, sir. Richard Thurling, on behalf of the applicant. So just initially dealing with the first point about the 25% variance and where that comes from, that forms part, as you say, the DEFRA guidance, which you've just referred to, and in particular the Local Air Quality Management Technical Guidance 16, which identifies that a 25% variance between modelling and monitoring data is acceptable. Further details on that methodology and the adjustment are provided in the ES Chapter 5 on air quality. I do also have my colleague, Ms. Robinson, with me today in relation to air quality matters. And at this point, if I invite Ms. Robinson to introduce herself, and then I think she'd be able to explain a little bit more about the approach in relation to gradients and vehicles, and then that might conveniently lead into the next question, sir.
Thank you, that's helpful. Ms. Thank Robinson. You.
Susie Robinson, Air Quality Specialist for National Highways. In relation to the terrain, effectively, we did give a response previous, a more detailed response on that previously, but just to summarise on that. So effectively, what we did within the air quality modelling was we did an initial model without terrain, and we would have done a model verification process, and we found and as part of that we look at ways at how we could improve that model verification prior to applying any sort of adjustment. So what we found though is we've actually applied in specific locations in the model area where we found that there was a gradient in the road of greater than 6%. We applied we did some further work on the emissions calculations to reflect the impact that you would have of the gradient on the vehicle emissions. So that was vehicle emissions for both the heavy vehicles and other types of vehicles such as cars and light commercial vehicles. And then we then took that as our core model run. So reran that model, re-undertook the verification. We found that there were still some differences of over 25%, but how we've addressed that is we've applied a model adjustment within local zones within that the whole air quality study area to reflect those local factors, because we found there wasn't anything further that we could do in terms of the model setup to better reflect what was happening there in terms of the potential terrain impacts.
Thank you.
No, that's all I was going to say. Thank you, sir.
OK, thank you. So just to ensure that I've understood correctly. So the verification was of the model against measured data, monitoring data, or?
That's right, yes.
Yeah. So there was an initial verification process that led to adjustments being made for gradients more than 6%. So those adjustments were applied. And then there were still discrepancies of over 25%. So that could have been due to gradient or any other discrepancies, I imagine. So there were model-wide adjustments that were then carried out. Have I broadly understood?
That's right, yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that's clear. Would the local authorities comment? Are there any concerns from the local authorities about the consideration of terrain, including heavy duty vehicles travelling uphill? And could I start with High Peak, please?
Yes, there are. The model that was just described is accurate. There is quite a lengthy response by Highways England, which I'll be responding to. But just to clarify a couple of points in that, terrain does come into the initial model setup, looking at meteorology and things like that. So that would look at, you would set up your model and it would look at things like downwash effects of buildings and that sort of stuff. That's not, as Highways England correctly states, usually if that's less than 10% on a road, it wouldn't particularly influence that. And so they haven't looked at that. The issue for us really was looking at the emissions and the EFT that they've used to apply to emissions for vehicles when they're on a gradient. Now, the EFT maximum gradient that you can input into that is 6%. However, you can put in a gradient from 0.1 to 6%. And it's not clear why only a 6% gradient was applied at three locations and no gradient at all was applied, which would have basically equated the, translated, if you like, the traffic makeup on a road to the emissions that are coming out, as in if it's a flat road, or the emissions are different to if there's a gradient, the emissions will increase, particularly with regard to HGV vehicles and larger vehicles, as you'd expect, because they're bigger and take more energy to move. So that would be our concern there.
So if I understand that, there's a feeling that adjustments should be made for gradients of less than 6% as well.
Absolutely. With regard to the EFT model, yes.
Yeah.
And then the emissions, the applications of the emission factors that you use when you change your vehicle numbers, if you like. So the way it would work is that vehicle types have an emissions amount of emissions coming from them, and that changes dependent on speed and also dependent on the gradient that's applied. So we want a bit of clarity as to what gradient was applied with Tint Whistle particularly, but that would apply everywhere, I guess.
And that will, you will set that out in a written submission in more detail, did you say? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes, we can, yes.
Yes, thank you. And could that be for deadline 4? Thank you. That's thank you, High Peak. We'll leave the applicant to respond to that written submission. Thank you. Tameside, anything to add, please?
Simon Eastwood, Tameside. No, nothing to add, really.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to the next point. Modelling and methodology. High Peak Borough Council raised a number of concerns in their deadline 2 submission about modelling and methodology. That included consideration of the air quality management areas, which we'll come to later. So we could leave that to later. There were questions about the accuracy of the traffic data used for screening. That we are asking some questions on that around the air quality management areas later as well. There was a question of clarity of the data used for model verification, concerns about the back annualized data and the potential for underprediction by the model, questions about whether the model had been improved in line with DEFRA guidance. Questions about the application of various correction factors. We've had a discussion about some of those. And the potential for background concentrations to be underpredicted by up to 30%. whether that was high. The applicant responded to those concerns at deadline three. I won't summarise all of those responses. Having reviewed those responses, would High Peak Borough Council like to respond? Actually, it would be helpful if High Peak Borough Council could give an overall response now to the applicant's responses. I suspect these are things that it would also be useful to for the council to respond to in writing. But if an overall response could be given, that would be helpful.
Yes, I can give an overall response. I haven't had time to, well, I have had time to digest. My computer's just frozen, so.
Okay, I sympathise.
It says it's out of memory. The issues that we currently raise, and they have been addressed to a point. I've obviously got to interrogate what the applicant has stated. Some of the information that we requested has been stated to have occurred, but I'm having to do this from memory, but we haven't seen necessarily the evidence of that. And that is really regarding the initial model setup. One of my concerns, and it's not, I certainly sympathise with the ability to set up a good model, but one of our clarities that we wanted was really what the applicant considered to be the baseline data that he was verifying his model against. And that comes to the point that I made previously. And for the layman, if you like, the issue there is with an ideal model, you would verify against data that you've collected yourself for a given year. And then you would set your model up to match that data as best you can by setting up a mimicking of that. That was a step removed in this case. And the majority, or some of the data at least, or a quite considerable amount of the data, was not from year 2018, but it was back corrected in many cases from 2019 or even forward projected from 2015-16. This invariably will introduce additional error in the accuracy of those measurements. I don't want to Highways England have responded to that, and I haven't had a chance to fully digest the arguments that they've put forward for that. What I would say as an overview is that in an ideal world, I think they would have looked at separate models set up slightly differently for the different terrains. What there is an overarching assumption is that the flow of air, the emissions and everything across the whole scheme with one model that you can then apply correction factors for is the approach to take, or at least that's what it seemed with the initial submission. I know that Highways England now gone on to say that they did look at the initial setup of the model. So basically, if you get your initial setup of a model and it's quite a bit out from the prediction, to the first stage is to go, hang on a minute, is our imaginary picture of the scene that we are modeling accurate? Because they're so widely different. And it was that I was seeking clarification, that is what had happened in the first instance. So, for example, it would be, you know, does Tintwistle, which is quite high up, represent the same as somewhere in Mottram that's really busy and low down? In an ideal world, I'm sure it's time constraints and what like that, you would perhaps look at individual areas. And certainly when you get close to areas that are subject to small change may impact the air quality more, you would perhaps expect that to be done in a more detailed fashion in those areas, such as the AQMAs, which weren't looked at in this instance.
Okay, thank you. There are some quite technical aspects to the discussion. Yeah. Obviously, it's necessary to cover those technical aspects correctly. It would be helpful to us to include some plain English so that we can also help to follow the key issues. We have a technical mindset, but we're not air quality specialists, so be helpful for us to have an understanding. Are you able to say at this stage, so there are questions later about air quality management areas, and we've got some real concerns about those. The types of the issues that you're looking to have clarity on, could those have result in some of the assessments changing to a large degree, or do you have a feeling about that at all?
Certainly, what I would say is that they've done some sensitivity analysis, and that was okay. It was pretty, you know, it gave some confidence that the results are not necessarily widely out. The difficult it's a slight issue with the way that local air quality, for example, what the RMSM factor and the 25% thing that you were doing before, what you might do is you would, when you're doing a prediction, the RMS will come out with a number. It will be the number that's actually in the thing that you're, the reason that they give a 10% error as the ideal is that equates to a 4 micron change error either side. And form, and when the limit is 40, so it's a 10%, so it's 4. Obviously, when you're in the range of 25%, then you're 10 either way, like in terms of the difference. Now, that's not the overall difference, that's the proportion equated to a car. But it still obviously ups that accuracy of your readings. And then when that is done in a report, and this is certainly nothing to do with Highways England, that error factor is not necessarily noted. And they don't have to note that, but it is a consideration. So you always want a more robust model to get a more accurate assessment of the impacts in that way. So I suppose from our point of view, it would be more of a coherent story as to why the way the model is set up in terms of, for example, there's a section on data was used and what data was discarded, and in some instances there's good arguments as to what the data was and used and what was discarded, but the initial run of the model was so scatter, as in it was all over the place and you got a line going through the middle saying this should be the prediction, it did suggest that possibly the model wasn't applicable across the whole scheme in its initial phase. Yeah, there is some concerns on the accuracy, or at least the way that that's been translated to me, the way the robustness that they set the model up. But I don't want to. I do know that they have some good or explanation made, so I don't want to to go in too hard on them until I've read their responses as to
that. Okay, that's helpful. There are issues that, you know, we are concerned about, and obviously if there are underlying residual concerns about the accuracy of the modelling, then, you know, those could be quite important. So look forward to seeing your responses, the applicant's responses to those. We'll be watching those very carefully. Thank you. Right, let's move on from that into the construction phase, quantitative assessment of construction traffic scoped out. Again, High Peak Borough Council raised concerns about screening, and there were concerns raised about whether additional construction vehicles had been considered, and traffic management measures included in the screen. The applicant responded to say that construction vehicle movements weren't included in the model, but other screening was carried out, that substantial traffic management was not expected, and impact for short term, and there's reference to DMRB LA 105 criteria. So having again seen that response, High Peak Borough Council, perhaps there's another one to take in writing, but any overall comments to add to what you've already said on this one, please?
I do apologise, my screen is frozen. I think the main take-home response that I read in that was that the traffic impacts are not actually considered to be affecting High Peak, I believe, in that response that they gave when I glanced over it. I'll caveat that we will respond at a later date on that, just to clarify that. But this may be one more for our colleagues at Tameside as well.
Okay, that's thank you. And in fact, yes, the applicant did clarify that construction vehicles are not proposed to use existing roads within High Peak. Did Tameside have any concerns about the modelling of construction vehicles in their area and the screening applied there?
Well, most of the construction is in Tameside. So yes, I presume we will have some concerns, but I think we need to reply in writing to that.
Okay, thank you. So if there's reference in the agenda to the applicant's responses. So yes, if we could have a submission from you in writing, that would be very helpful. Thank you. Mr. Wimbley, I think your camera's on. Thank you. Right, let's move. Would the applicant like to respond to any of those issues, or is it happy to wait and respond to High Peak Borough Council's deadline for submissions at deadline 5 in writing?
Thank you, sir. Richard Thurling on behalf of the applicant. In terms of responding to High Peak, we're happy to respond in writing once they've had the opportunity to digest and access the information if the screens are not working at the moment, and respond accordingly. All I was going to say, sir, was just in relation for the benefit of Tameside, that there are references in the agenda to where responses have been provided, but actually the response about the construction vehicles is actually a response that National Highways gave to the local impact report.
Yes.
By Derbyshire and High Peak. And that's actually library reference REP3 -018. And I believe it's on page 20, and it's in response to point 8.35.
Yes.
And just noted that wasn't appearing in the question, although I think it is referenced later on, sir.
It is, and thank you for that. That's I have the same references as notes to myself, but so thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. Let's move on to pre-commencement. I think we dealt with pre-commencement earlier in the week, but let's just double check. The local authorities were generally not concerned about pre-commencement activities and the mitigation of those, apart from archaeology in particular. So that's been addressed separately. In its response to one of the written questions, the applicant did say, though, that complaint response procedures and a community engagement plan would be prepared and implemented prior to construction. I wonder, is that indeed the applicant's intent? I don't believe that's secured anywhere, but is that plan intended to be produced at that time? And is that a necessary mitigation that's needed during the pre-commencement stage? Could the applicant comment on that, please? Tameside, Mr. Eastwood, your camera's still on. I don't know if that's intentional.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Richard Thurling on behalf of the applicant. So I can confirm that plan is to be read. And in fact, the outline of that plan was submitted at deadline 3. I believe it's included in the outline nuisance management plan, which I think you'll recall was submitted at deadline 3 and actually forms the next set of questions.
I don't think there is a mechanism currently within the DCO to secure that pre-commencement.
I think we've given a response, as you say, in relation to pre-commencement and mitigation measures. I think the point there was that all the effects are within the normal realms of what you would expect. And as per the discussion on Tuesday, the local authorities agreed with that approach. And I think the point is that everything was reversible, such that, yes, sir.
So is the applicant's position that the complaint response procedures, the community engagement plan mitigation prior to construction is not necessary? To have that plan secured and in place prior to construction, is that necessary mitigation or not?
No, sir, I don't believe that is necessary mitigation prior to construction.
Okay, thank you. And could are the local authorities content with that? And let's just concentrate on High Peak first, please?
Yes, I think we probably are.
Thank you. And Thameside, please.
Simon Eastwood, Thameside. Yes, I think so, yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Just mitigation and monitoring. The applicant submitted an outline nuisance mitigation plan at deadline 3. And thank you for that. Question why? The applicant has noted that DMRB LA 105 does not follow Institute of Air Quality Management guidance. I think that the applicant has particularly suggested that DMRB LA 105 is designed more appropriately for the type of mitigation required for this type of project, being a highways project. Do the local authorities have a view on whether DMRB LA 105 just mitigation measures are appropriate, or whether the mitigation should be in accordance with IAQM guidance? Should any other recognised guidance be included in the plan? High Peak Borough Council first, please.
I mean, the guidance is broadly similar in many regards. We would probably prefer it if it was done in line with IQ QMA guidance, but it's not a deal breaker, if you like.
Preferred but not essential.
Yeah.
And anything to add from Thameside, please?
No.
Okay. Could the applicant comment further on that? Perhaps highlight is it possible to highlight the differences of the IAQM guidance to the DMRB guidance? Might be something in writing, but just so that we can understand the differences.
Yes, sir. I think I can go one better than that, hopefully. So insofar as, although the dust assessment has been undertaken using the DMRB assessment methodology, because a high risk dust potential was identified, dust mitigation measures for that high dust risk potential were identified from the IAQM guidance, and they have been included in the nuisance management plan, which we provided at deadline 3.
So the IAQM guidance would be used for the high risk areas.
It's the mitigation measures arising from those high dust risk potential areas has been incorporated.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Let's move on to Z. Do the local authorities have any general comments or concerns on provisions for dust mitigation and monitoring in the nuisance mitigation plan? I'm assuming that there's been enough time to consider that plan. Are the local authorities able to comment on at this stage, or would they prefer more time to examine that plan? High Peak, please.
We'll send written confirmation, but I'm broadly in agreement with the plan.
Thank you. And Thameside, please.
We'll send written confirmation.
Thank you. And if those could be provided, well, if possible, by deadline 4, that would be helpful, and then there's an opportunity for the applicant to respond at deadline 5 before we produce further questions. So deadline 4 would be helpful, but if more time is needed, then deadline 5 is suggested in the agenda. That's point AA. So let's move on to monitoring, please. High Peak Borough Council raised some concerns about monitoring in high-risk areas at high-risk sites. Just to observe that the environmental statement, paragraph 5.81, refers to monitoring, suggests that monitoring would be carried out. However, Section 511 suggests there would be no monitoring. And then there's reference to monitoring at high-risk sites being discussed with the local authority, and that additional mitigation measures should be consulted on with the local authority and agreed for high-risk areas. The applicant responded to High Peak Council's observations at deadline 3. So that there seems to be some difference between different parts of the ES as to the extent of monitoring. The REAC AQ 2.1 states that if necessary, monitoring parameters and a programme will be established and the effectiveness of mitigation will be evaluated in line with DMRV LA 105 Table 2.108.1. The REAC AQ 2.1 doesn't mention consultation with local authorities. This is a matter that High Peak Borough Council raised initially. Having seen the applicant's responses and having perhaps reflected on what's in the REAC currently, does High Peak Borough Council have any outstanding concerns about monitoring during construction, please?
We'd like to send the written submission on this one, Mike. I can't get it up on my thing at the minute. Initially, it did seem acceptable, but I would like to dig into it a bit.
Thank you. Let's move on to the operational phase. First question in relation to the assessment for the design year of 2040. The applicant said that the applicant said that the opening year of 2025 is expected to be a worst case rather than 2040 because increases in traffic between 2025 and 2040 would be more than offset by shift to electric vehicles. That seemed to be an assertion. I'm not aware of any quantification that supported that statement. Perhaps the local authorities could comment initially. So, High Peak again, please.
That would be true for nitrogen dioxide. In essence, nitrogen dioxide is reducing year on year from vehicle emissions from low emission vehicles, not only electric vehicles, but other vehicles too.
So evidence of that has been seen already?
Yeah, evidence of that has been seen. It wouldn't necessarily transfer over to particulate matter though.
Okay, yeah. And so High Peak Borough Council would be content with the applicant's assertion that the shift to electric vehicles would more than offset increases in emission between 2025 and 2040.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they are assessing, really. Does the increase in traffic compensate for the improvement in vehicle emissions?
The applicant has assessed 2025.
Yeah.
And it's explained it hasn't assessed 2040.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Because it's assumed that between 2025 and 2040, although the traffic levels would increase, the emissions that would be more than offset by a switch to electric vehicles. Does that seem reasonable?
It's reasonable for nitrogen dioxide. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's entirely reasonable from a particulate matter, which is less influenced by the emissions from a vehicle and more, things like particles from your tyres and brake wear, they would increase with increasing vehicle numbers currently.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Anything to add from Tim's side, please?
Not really, but I suppose the assumption depends on the take-up of electric vehicles over that time.
Okay, thank you. Would the applicant like to respond to that, please? So I think particularly on the point of particulates,
Thank you, Sir Richard Thurling, on behalf of the applicant. Obviously, we've heard what's said and welcome the agreement in relation to nitrogen dioxide. In terms of particulates, hear what was said in relation to that being related to other matters such as brake and tyre wear and things. I'm afraid that's a point I would need to just secure some instructions on, Sir. So perhaps if that was the comment that was going to come back in writing from High Peak, I think they alluded to, if that comes in at deadline 4, then naturally, of course, we can reply to that at deadline 5. So.
And if that isn't raised by High Peak at deadline 4, if it could be covered, the applicant can make sure that's covered in any case, that would be helpful.
So understood, and it does sound like a matter that insofar as we're at least already half agreed, it could be something that may even flow into the statement of common ground. So.
Okay, thank you. Actually, could I, rather than wait for the High Peak response, I think in providing the written summary at deadline 4, if it were possible just to cover the particulate issue. I'm not sure whether the particulate emissions have been close to threshold in any way, so it may be quite a straightforward response. I'm not sure, but if it could be made by deadline 4 in any case, that might be helpful.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Understood, and we'll arrange for that to be done.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's move on to air quality management areas. Start with the Tintwistle air quality management area. No receptors have been assessed in the Tintwistle air quality management area. And in response to a question, the applicant explained the reason for that was a screening out in accordance with DMRB LA105. And the applicant highlighted that the predicted changes in traffic of 960 AADT were below the threshold of 1,000 AADT. I think it had also been clarified that the thresholds of 1,000 vehicles and 200 HDVs represent the lowest threshold above which the traffic model can represent changes in traffic level with any degree of confidence. And it was explained that below that level, there could not be confidence that there would be a change. So against that background, could the applicant set out the level of confidence, so this is DD, the level of confidence in 960 AADT, the level of confidence in the accuracy of that, and the potential for changes in traffic to exceed the threshold of 1,000 AADT. Applicant, please.
Thank you, sir. Richard Thurling, on behalf of the applicant. So, as you say, we did include in the written response the note explaining that those thresholds are indeed the lowest possible thresholds that have been set to ensure that the traffic model can accurately represent traffic conditions with an appropriate level of confidence. So I think there's an important point to make about these thresholds are that they're not something that's new. They've been around for a long time, and they're consistently applied not only to this scheme but to other schemes, and I'm advised have been, you know, those thresholds have been in existence for many years. So there is a point about consistency there, and that if you start to expand that out, then you start to expand the assessment incrementally, and obviously that thresholds are there for a purpose, and unfortunately they are absolute. I do, as you know, have Miss Robinson with me today, because there was also a point raised yesterday in relation to AIQM thresholds by High Peak Borough Council. So at this point, if I just invite Miss Robinson to join me on screen, and she can perhaps add anything further that she might want to that initial response and just clarify the point in relation to AIQM before you bring in responses from the other parties. So, Ms. Robinson.
Thank you. Susie Robinson, Air Quality Specialist for National Highways. Yeah, I just want to acknowledge, yes, there are other thresholds that exist, such as those that are given in the Institute of Air Quality Management guidance. It's their Land Use and Development Control guidance. So those thresholds are in existence, which are they do have different thresholds from those that we've used in this assessment. But within that IAQM guidance, it does state that those thresholds are specifically intended for residential and mixed use developments, and that highway schemes have their own set of criteria and thresholds that are used.
Are those thresholds lower than the LA 105 thresholds typically?
They are lower, yes.
I don't have
those to hand, I'm afraid, right now. We'd have to respond in in writing on those. But they're typically used for land use planning.
Okay. Thank you. Let's continue through E and FF. The questions are very related. So one of the things we're trying to get to grips with is the consideration of air quality management areas and the provisions in the Act in particular, non-compliance issues around the Air Quality Directive, the Air Quality Standards Regs 2010. Within those, there are specific things that we need to consider in terms of whether there could be new exceedances, so new non-compliances within those areas. And that could result from errors being just below the threshold currently to just exceeding the threshold, which suggests that the changes could be rather small potentially. And then obviously there's the test of so no new exceedances, but then there's also the time scale to for planned measures to take below the exceedance level, not to be extended. That was bad wording. I hope you understand what I mean. In either case, the compliance considerations and the Air Quality Directive considerations actually may hinge around rather small changes in concentrations. I'm wondering the extent to which the DMRB guidance, which is looking at the 1,000 AADT, has that been designed more around a percentage increase is considered potentially significant, as opposed to, in this case, it's a compliance issue where a small change is the relevant thing. So does the DMRB guidance and approach, is that designed for the consideration of air quality management areas, the Air Quality Directive? Could the applicant, did that make sense, first of all? And could the applicant comment on that, please?
Thank you, sir. Richard Thurling on behalf of the applicant. So I believe we follow that reasoning and approach, and I believe Ms. Robinson will be able to join me and then explain in a greater detail the interrelationship between DMRB and the considerations in the directive.
Thank you. Ms. Robinson.
Susie Robinson, Air Quality Specialist for National Highways. I wanted to give a little bit of background just initially on the Air Quality Directive and what the work that DEFRA does in terms of assessing compliance against that in relation to what is within the DMRB LA 105 guidance. So within the DMRB LA 105 guidance, it there's a number of different parts to the air quality assessment that's undertaken. There's an assessment where we look at the overall kind of significance as a scheme based on changes in concentrations on human health and ecological sites. And also there's this called compliance risk assessment, which is in relation to compliance with the air quality directives. For these different elements, there's effectively two sets of future year concentrations that we calculations that we make that we consider in relation to these two parts of the assessment. So in terms of the compliance risk, we calculate future risk future year concentrations based on the DEFRA local air quality management technical guidance 16 methodology, and this uses a the projection of the future year concentrations, which is more optimistic. So effectively you get lower concentrations predicted with that typically. As part of our consideration of significance, we use something which is called it's the National Highways have developed, it's a long-term trends calculation method, and effectively it's less optimistic. So typically, as that part of the assessment on where we're considering significance, we have a lower, we're typically predicting kind of higher absolute concentrations. So in relation to the air quality directive, coming back to that, where we're assessing that item, we are looking at these less, more optimistic future year concentrations. And so effectively, is that and that element of the assessment where we've assessed it within our scheme area, in our scheme area, we assess that where we have an overlap between locations that DEFRA consider in their national level model for compliance, where there is that overlap with our affected road network, we assess compliance for those locations. So within our study area, it might be useful if we could bring up.
Could I just break in there a little bit?
So yes.
Are those calculations carried out independently of the screening, or does the screening result in those calculations not being carried out in some locations?
The screening is we'd still, for both of those levels of calculations, you would still undertake the same screening. So it still uses that 1000 ADT.
So you wouldn't be carrying out the calculations you've just said if it has been screened out for the compliance.
That's right. But effectively, what I was trying to say is that we're, as part of the compliance risk assessment, if we were to undertake those calculations at other locations, it would just be to note that the concentrations that we would model at those locations would be more optimistic. And so where we have undertaken those calculations very close to the Tintwistle AQMA on the A628 through Hollingworth, we're not showing an exceedance of limit values.
Yeah, but that isn't in the air quality management area.
But for another section of road there, it's just in terms of we're not showing exceedances when we look at it in terms of the LAQM, the DEFRA LAQM TG16 projections. So we're not showing there's a risk of compliance in that adjacent section of road, whereas we have had to consider that in the overall significance of the scheme, because when we're looking at less optimistic projections of future year concentrations, we are showing exceedances.
Does the screening out, does DEFRA recognise screening out at all? Is that part of the methodology DEFRA applies?
I mean, the methodology that DEFRA applies is they're only actually looking at it in certain locations. They have a national level model of road links, and that is very much focused on urban areas. So they consider it mainly, and they're looking at kind of they split the UK into zones and agglomerations. So the nearest agglomeration for this would be the Greater Manchester area.
So there's no guidance within the DEFRA methodology around assessment or screening out in the way the applicant supplied it here. There's no direct analogy there.
That's right. No, there isn't.
Yeah. Okay. Before I invite the High Peak in particular to comment, and if they wish Peak District National Park. So what we're grappling with here is we have a need to consider compliance with the Air Quality Directive. And the National Policy Statement is very clear about that. There is evidence of increases in traffic flows, albeit at a level the applicant has suggested cannot be confidently taken as an indication of change. However, it does appear to be generally accepted that there will be an increase in traffic as a result of the proposed development. So I think we need to be mindful of that background, of there being likely to be an increase. The increase in traffic would appear likely to lead to an increase in emissions. And some of those increases in traffic do appear to go through the Tintwistle Air Quality Management Area. So we seem to be in a position where the National Policy Statement is directing us to be satisfied in the respects that I set out earlier. And I think we have reason to suspect there might be an increase in emissions in those areas. So we're left in the position of being required to consider it, but not having the information available to reach a firm conclusion, because points haven't been identified in the air quality management area in Tintwistle. Could the applicant just comment on that little dilemma and difficulty, and whether it's able to help us in that in any way, please?
Thank you, sir. Richard Billing on behalf of the applicant. I think Mr. Robinson's still with us and might be able to just tackle that last point you were asking. I know from what she was explaining a moment ago that the DEFRA certainly doesn't identify that there's a compliance risk in Tintwistle, but Ms. Robinson may be able to assist you further just in relation to potential for increased traffic, I think you were saying, sir, and that being likely to lead to an increase in emissions, I think was the point you were asking.
So that I'm using very simple logic there. yes, so are you able to help us with that at all, please?
Susie Robinson, Air Quality Specialist for National Highways. I can give a few further points of clarification on that. Yes, I acknowledge that, you know, an increase in traffic, it could result in an increase in emissions and associated increase in concentrations. But typically what we would do is we need to look at that increase in the context of what the current, you know, the existing or the forecast kind of without scheme concentration is, you know, we'd look at that in that context. DEFRA hasn't currently identified that Tintwistle is an area where there is a compliance risk. As I said earlier, it's a national level model. And in fact, effectively what they're predicting within their national level model at that location is that we're already well below the limit value in that location.
Okay, so that's helpful. So it'd be helpful to set that out if possible. Is it too late to identify some points within the Tintwistle area and to update the assessment to include those? The suggestion is being made there, I think, that the Tintwistle current levels are sufficiently far below the threshold that the proposed development is unlikely to take them above the threshold. That seems to be the suggestion. I think it would give us more comfort to know that there had been some quantitative analysis of that. Do we think that's possible within the timeframes that we have?
Susie Robinson, Air Quality Specialist, National Highways. I think we'd have to just take that away and look at the timescales for that. But just noting, if we would be going beyond the kind of the screening criteria for that are within DMRB that would be going outside of that, you know, the standard that we have used for the assessment, and we need to maintain, you know, consistency.
Yeah, and I understand that, and we get that tension between following the DMRB and us having been satisfied about following the national policy statement. So I hope that the applicant would be mindful of our dilemma in that respect. So if that could be considered, and we'll wait for your response on that, I think, before taking that further.
So, thank you. Richard Burley on behalf of the applicant. I was just going to say, I think we're back to the point we were discussing earlier about the thresholds, aren't we, sir, and the appropriateness of that. So it might be that we provide you with a sort of further substantiated response on that.
That would be helpful. I think we need further help on this point. I think that would be good. So with respect to Tin Twistle in particular, would High Peak District Council like to comment? Other concerns that I've raised, does High Peak Borough Council have any view of the concerns that I've raised? And does High Peak District Council have any of its own concerns about the air quality management area in Tin Twistle or the appropriate way forward?
Yeah, I'll just a couple of points. The compliance point assessment and the screening out of air quality management are slightly different. One, compliance point assessments are set by central government based on model data, and they identify areas where there's high levels, and so it's a separate thing. I don't think, as they mentioned, the Woodhead Road is on the compliance point bit. However, the key thing for us, I think, and it was a question, was how confident are we that the 960 cars, which is 40 below the screening criteria, what is the wiggle room there? How accurate is that? It seems to be, I wouldn't say churlish, but the argument, it would seem a precautionary principle would be to assess the unidentified area of the air quality management zone where we are known to have issues, albeit we are very much improved in that area, but still.
Particularly given it is an air quality management area.
Yes, yeah. Particularly given, and as I say, 1,000 to 960, the screening out is very reliant on the accuracy of the forecast model. And obviously, how accurate the forecast model is, my colleagues at DCC answered those questions, but as a layman, I would have concerns along the A57 as well, that is only going to lead to an increase of 300 cars, you know.
Yeah, we'll come to that one. Thank you. That's helpful. Thank you. But perhaps the applicant could take that on board as it responds. So would it actually have been helpful, or would it still be helpful to have a more precautionary view of the 960 and the carrying out of an assessment, not screening out that area?
Could I just add one more thing? Sorry, just before you go, one thing I would say is that even if the air quality assessment and the modelling had extended into the air quality management areas and found no effect, etc., that would have still been extremely beneficial to High Peak Borough Council, because it would have provided us with an updated an accurate screening model assessment to help enable us to inform our action plans in the future. Would give us an updated screening assessment to help us to target measures.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure the applicant will take that on board. Thank you. Let's look at now the Dinting Vale and Glossop air quality management area. So we're moving on to the A57. Did Peak District National Park Authority want to comment at all on Tin Twistle air quality management area?
Thank you, sir. Tim Nicholson, Peak District National Park Authority. I would echo the comments made by the representative from High Peak Borough Council. As you'll be aware, half of Tin Twistle lies within the Peak District National Park, and the park with the air quality management area is within the national park. So we do have some concerns about potential impact of the increase in traffic, and particularly that given the relatively small number of vehicles between the threshold and the predicted level, that this wasn't just covered as a in a precautionary way. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. That's helpful. Thank you very much. Right, let's move to Dintingvale and Glossop. The applicant had considered a single receptor in the Dintingvale-Glossop air quality management area, and that was assessed as having a worsening in air quality due to the proposed development. Could the applicant please, so this is question HH, could the applicant please set out whether the worsening in air quality indicates that the proposed development would affect the ability of a non-compliant area to achieve compliance within the most recently reported timescales, which is one of the tests that we need to consider. Applicant, please.
Thank you, sir. Richard Thurling on behalf of the applicant. So again, if I invite Ms. Robinson, she'll be able to just explain the implications for compliance in the areas first. So Ms. Robinson, join us on screen. She's there.
Susie Robinson, Air Quality Specialist for National Highways. I just wanted to just clarify a point initially in regard to the reference to a single receptor within the Glossop AQMA at the Dintingvale Glossop AQMA location. So we've considered a single assessment in terms of a single receptor in terms of assessing, looking at significance, because we have a single receptor there which exceeds the air quality, the government air quality strategy objective for annual mean nitrogen dioxide. We have considered additional receptors in our modelling within that location. That's not the only receptor that we've considered at that location. So I can make reference to it's document reference AP P076. APP078. And that shows all of the receptors that we have considered in that location.
And that's for a compliance assessment?
The ones that we've considered in the compliance assessment actually are shown in, I can just get this a moment. It's shown in one of the subsequent figures. I can just give that to you now. It's... the receptors considered within the compliance risk assessment specifically are in APP080.
And is there more than one of those in that air quality management area for the compliance?
Yes, that's right, yes.
My apologies if I got that wrong in the question, apologies. Sorry, which document was that again?
APP080, so that's a figure that shows the receptors that we've considered within the EU compliance risk assessment.
Okay, thank you.
Or air quality directive, I mean.
Okay, are you able to say how many receptors were considered there for the compliance assessment in that air quality management area?
I don't have that information to hand right now. I think we can come back to you on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
But in relation to this area, again, similar to what I discussed in relation to the Tint Whistle AQMA, when we're considering the compliance risk assessment at this location, we're looking at that in terms of the DEFRA LAQM 2G16 projections for the future year concentrations. So in that context, with those projections, we're not finding that we've got an exceedance at that location. So we concluded that we don't have a compliance risk a risk of compliant non-compliance.
Has there been a predicted worsening of air quality due to the proposed development at any of the receptors in that air quality management area?
I believe in that area we do have increases in concentrations in that compliance risk assessment, but not to the extent that it would affect complying with the air quality limit values. If we want any specifics, I think we might need to come back on we do have the results tabulated in the environmental statement, but I think it might be that we need to come back to you in terms of a written submission with that information.
Thank you. That would be
specifically.
Helpful. So I think from the environmental statement from the main chapter, I picked up a suggestion that the proposed development would increase emissions at one of the receptors in that air quality management area. And if the proposed development was to increase the concentrations in that area, then would that not lead to a delay in a non-compliant area achieving compliance? That was the train of logic. So if the applicant was able to clarify around that point, so it's I guess the questions are, have any receptors in that air quality management area been assessed as having a worsening air quality due to the proposed development? And if there are, and those are above the threshold, or would become above the threshold, is there a compliance risk, and could there be delay in non-compliant areas achieving compliance within the timescales? Does that make reasonable sense?
Susie Robinson, yeah, air quality specialist for National Highways. I'll take that one. So, in this particular area, there isn't currently considered to be a compliance risk, a risk for non-compliance at this location in relation to the forecasts based on the DEFRA LAQM TG16 concentrations that we predicted for 2025. So we do have some increases in concentrations, but they are not to the level that it would result in exceeding the limit value threshold.
So they're all still below the limit values, even with the increase.
When we look at it in terms of the DEFRA LAQM TG16 concentration predictions.
Okay.
So again, just to stress, there is a difference from what we've the concentrations that we use when we look at the more precautionary approach for the significance overall of the scheme.
So the DMRB assessment would be more precautionary and might show some issues, but the DEFRA-based assessment, there isn't a compliance.
That's right, yes.
Right. I think it would be helpful just to set that out if possible. Okay. Thank you. Do High Peak Borough Council have any comments on that, please?
Yes, I do have some comments on that. Again, just to reiterate, there's a slight difference between the AQMAs and the European directive. It was slightly difficult looking at the compliance points in the report initially. I think we raised that they weren't particularly labelled very well. When we put the GIS in, I didn't see, so looking at the compliance issue, I didn't see any of those that extended into the AQMA. They were north of the junction, the Glossopdale junction, and which is the area I believe that's highlighted in the government's monitoring. We don't have a great deal of our own receptors there, if you like, because it's done on roads. So there's not a great deal of housing actually there where these exceedances were. The AQMA, as far as I'm aware, no assessment has been done past the corner junction with the Dinton Vale Glossop junction. So we perhaps want a little bit of clarification on that. Again, that is screened out because it is perceived to be only 300 vehicle car increase and vehicle increase. And also below the 200 change in HGV use, which was another issue that we changed. Just to note, I do have the EPUK values, and they are around 10% lower. So it will be a change in the DMRB. It's a change of 200 HGV vehicles. In the Institute of Air Quality Management, it is a change of 25 vehicles in and around an air quality management zone, HGV vehicle.
Quite a big difference. Yeah.
It's quite a big difference.
Okay, I'm now feeling slightly confused because on one hand I think the applicant say it's considered several receptors in the air quality management area, whereas High Peak have given a slightly different view.
Yes, it's because there's two separate assessments that's been conducted. Well, there's actually three if you look at the deposition, but there's two separate assessments that's been conducted. One is looking essentially at your traditional air quality assessment, which was regarding the comments that I made earlier and the way that that model is set up. And then the second one is to do with compliance assessment, which is the legislation you're referring to. And that was based on, essentially came about because the UK breached the old EU measures in terms of improvement. So the government modelled areas where it considered nationally, where quite rightly the consultant said, nationally, and so they've identified conglomerations very similar in concept to the noise mapping exercise, where the government identifies areas likely to be exceeding or proven to be exceeding. There's certainly cases of that, and I know locally where I'm based, where local air quality management has indicated no exceedance, but the government modelling has indicated exceedance, and so the government has been under direction, which is exactly why the Manchester Clean Air Zone came about. The government was under direction to do that, but it was based on the modelling, not a collection of the local authorities' data that they'd done. It's a slightly separate thing. But okay. I hope it's not confused matters more.
I think I need to read through some of the submissions carefully. I think it would be helpful. So if the applicant could respond on the Dinting Vale Glossop air quality management area and on the air quality directive considerations in that area. So if we could have that response, and then perhaps if High Peak could then comment on the applicant's responses. Does that seem acceptable? So would the applicant be able to provide a submission by deadline 4 on that?
Richard Delling on behalf of the applicant. We can provide that clarity on the, by deadline 4.
Would High Peak please be able to comment on the applicant's submission and then set out any residual concerns on the air quality directive and the air quality management area issues, compliance issues as well?
Yeah. I would say, we've got less concern over the air quality directive compliance. We maintain our concern that no air quality assessment has been undertaken within the AQMA, and that the lack of air quality assessment has been completely based on the screening and the assumptions made within that and the transport model.
Okay, thank you. That is helpful, thank you. I'm not going to go into JJ. Perhaps that could be addressed in the written responses. We've taken a response from High Peak District Council to this issue. Do Peak District National Park want to raise anything in relation to the Dinting Vale Glossop air quality management area and the air quality directive considerations? Peak District National Park, anything to add, please? I'll take that as Mr. Nicholson is just.
I think he may have dropped out the meeting, so I'll just add him back in.
Thank you. Mr. Nicholson, I think you perhaps just rejoined us. You may have missed some of the discussion we've just had. We were discussing the Dinting Vale Glossop air quality management area. High Peak District Council do have some concerns. Particularly in relation to the air quality management area. The applicant's going to set out a clarification for us at deadline 4, and High Peak Borough Council are going to respond to that at deadline 5. Are there any particular concerns that the Peak District National Park Authority has about the Dinting Vale Glossop air quality management area and about the air quality directive compliance issues in that area?
Thank you, sir. Tim Nicholson, Peak District National Park Authority. This particular air quality management area is outside the national park boundary, so I will accede to my colleague at High Peak Borough Council's opinion on this. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Right. We are approaching the end of this item. I earlier suggested that we give other parties an opportunity to comment. Just bear with me a moment, please. These two minutes each, if parties would like to comment. As always, there are opportunities to submit in writing, but I will give parties an opportunity. So Carol Hallam, please. And I'm mindful that you have made a written submission on air quality. But if there's anything else you'd like to raise, please do.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Carol Hallam, volunteer from the community group Share First, My Journey to School. And really, it was just an offer of continued engagement on air quality. And I just wondered, with the discussions on Dinting Vale and Glossop that we had, I think particularly in hearing one on Tuesday, and the openness, you know, of the applicant to explore issues perhaps with another arrangement, whether air quality, if there are any outstanding issues on air quality that need to be looked at, perhaps that could be it could be included there, just as a suggestion. And we may be able to help with other suggestions for mitigation, which I'm happy to put in writing.
Okay, let's see how the applicant responds. I'm not sure that any specific mitigation is being proposed by the applicant at this stage, but perhaps they can come in at the end here. But thank you for that contribution. Dr. Robinson, anything that the CPRE would like to raise?
Yes, please. We don't seem to have had a response to our concerns about the model refinement that was supposed to address the three areas of air pollution that might have stopped the DCO proceeding. And the two, Tintwistle and Dinting Air Quality Management Area. And in those two air quality management areas, the traffic flows are substantially lower in 2025, modelled by NH, compared with the flows that we were seeing between 2015 and 2019 as observed. So it's 35% lower on High Street West. That's 6,000 less vehicles modelled in 2025 compared with what we've been seeing over the last 5 or 6 years. So that doesn't make sense to us. And there's a similar drop with the Tintwistle one as a 13% drop. I just wondered if somebody could address that lack of understanding. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll invite the applicant to respond shortly. Mr. Bagshaw, anything that you'd like to raise in relation to air quality, please?
No, there's nothing I want to add myself on that, no.
Yeah, thank you. And Mr. Wimberley, please.
Hello, is that?
Hello, Mr. Wimberley, we can hear you.
Yeah, you can't see me, but there we are. Okay. Yes, well, Dr. Robinson has started on that tack, that was going to be the last thing I said. And then I'll be the first thing I say. And I do hope that maybe the 2 minutes can be stretched a bit, because I do have important things to say about this matter, and I had prepared them quite carefully. On the matter of the screening out is dependent on the forecasting model we heard from one of the participants in the discussion. And as Dr. Robinson says, Tintwistle and Dinting have been excluded on the basis of the modelling. In Tintwistle, I've done the charts showing what she said, which is that the drop in traffic through Tintwistle is quite extraordinary. The measured 2019 figures are completely different from the 2025 model, which goes back to the 2015 figures. So a drop of 7,500, I think it is roughly. And that is quite frankly incredible. And so there is a real question mark about, you know, people are talking about 960 being just under 1,000. We're talking about a 7,500 difference in the baseline, which is the 2025 model effectively. So there is a real problem there. And the problem in Dinting is the same problem, only different. I sat in a bus outside Dinting School. I didn't realise that's where I was, but I was, and the traffic was completely solid. I went on the bus an hour later and there was no traffic. And the difference is, of course, that the annual is, makes the point that the annual mean is not the point. You don't experience the annual mean, you experience the traffic that is going into your nose at that moment. And the nearest proxy is the hourly mean. And we keep talking about the annual mean. So, I mean, that's in a sense a side issue. The dinting problem is solved by the Hadfield alternative and the Shore Lane Dinting Road bypass, apparently. But it's all been created in order to, I would suggest, in order to avoid this issue. There is a real sensitivity about not monitoring the AQMAs, not doing the assessment from HE, and I call the Highways England. And I wonder why that is. And I have here the actual words of the, and I think it's important to put them on the record here in the hearings as well, the statement coming out of the 790-page document that was finally handed over in November. And it says at 7.3.1, need for modelling refinement. Initial air quality modelling undertaken by Arcadis, that's the previous consultants.
Mr. Wimbley, apologies. Yeah. That we're very familiar with that document has been provided. In your written representation, you referred to that same quotation. So right. We've seen both the original document, we've seen your written reference to that. So there's no need to go through that again.
Right, fair enough, Thank you. It would jeopardise the development consent application. This is big stuff. And what we find is that the consultant changed at that moment. And we now have traffic forecasts, which effectively scope out the two AQMAs. So I would put it to you that that is a very serious matter.
And, thank you, Mr. Wimbley. I'm going to ask you, if you could start to wrap up. I realise that you've produced some material and that you were some written material and I think some bar charts that you were intending to submit. We very much welcome. I'm sorry about the timescales before this hearing. There wasn't time for that to be submitted. We need things in the examination library before they're shown in the hearing. But please do submit those at the next deadline.
Yeah.
And if you have new matters to raise, then please do raise those. We are going through every written submission, but if I could now ask you to start to conclude your oral submission now. If you could start to conclude that, please, that would be helpful.
Yes, fair enough. Well, I suppose there's some important things. One is that air pollution kills. Now, I revised my knowledge of air pollution overnight, and my goodness, this is a critical issue. And I would like to draw your attention to a relevant representation comment that someone made and hasn't, to my knowledge, been followed up. This man, I think it was a gentleman, mentioned the Withenshaw research into lung disease in this area, and he said that we were in the bottom 23 areas for lung disease, and of course that's related to air pollution as well as other factors. But I see nothing in the ES population and health relating to quantitative teasing out of how much this scheme will affect those figures and what the figures are now. We don't have a baseline, even in the environmental statement, so-called, we don't have a baseline for the actual deaths due to all the diseases that we know are associated with air pollution. There's nothing there. There's quite a bit on deprivation and indices of deprivation and how and where the different wards and certain wards figure on those charts, but nothing on health in relation to air pollution.
Thank you, Mr.
Make on methodology, which I'll have to put in my written submission, but the gist is that we are working to far too low thresholds and limits, and that is covered by the legal position which you have to follow, which is to assess the adverse impacts against the benefits of the scheme. And the adverse impacts do not depend on what the government says is safe. It depends on what is safe. And that is a different thing.
Thank you, Mr. Wimber. And you have set out some of those things as well. We are actually, both yourself now and Dr. Robinson have set out some matters around differences between observed and modelled traffic. And so we are very interested in seeing those and seeing the applicant's responses to those, because actually a lot of the other assessments depend on the traffic modelling. So it is important that we're satisfied that traffic modelling has been reasonable, and that's in comparison with observed traffic is an aspect of that we'd like to see. So look forward to seeing the figures on that. Thank you. The health issues, we had raised in first written questions health issues. So if there is evidence and facts in the locality that could link or that do link health issues with air pollution in the locality, then we'd be certainly interested in seeing that. I'm sorry to cut you short. We do need to move on. And as I've said a number of times, the written submissions are equally important. And in some cases, when we're into highly technical areas such as this, actually often more useful. So thank you.
Could I make one final plea on the health?
The very final, Mr. Wimbley, please.
Yes, you're asking me to do some kind of assessment of the health issues related to air pollution in the study area. Frankly, that is the job of the environmental statement. That should be in front of you and me at this time. It shouldn't be me having to go and do something which I frankly am not qualified to do. I have looked for this data. I know it's there, and I know what the sources might be, but it's not really my job.
I'll let the applicant come back on that. There have been some considerations of health within the environmental statement that we've looked at. It is a valid point. So let me ask the applicant whether they can respond to that now. Thank you, Mr. Wimberley. Would the applicant like to respond on the point just made by Mr. Wimberley about the consideration of health implications of air pollution changes caused by the proposed development? So is it able to respond on that now to signpost any parts of the ES? And would the applicant like to respond to any of the other submissions that we've just heard?
Thank you, sir. Richard Turling on behalf of the applicant. So dealing with them in that sort of order then, sir, as you say, that the applicant contends that all the appropriate assessments are included in the environmental statement and the relevant chapters. The point about air quality, of course, that we'd make at this time is that air quality is actually improved with the scheme in place. That's one of the key deliverables. I'm being told that the health assessment within the environmental statement is being conducted in accordance with the appropriate guidance, which for that chapter is LA112. Insofar as Mr. Wimberley is referring to a further piece of research, I think he said he was going to include that in writing, and then obviously when we see that, we can consider that and respond appropriately. In terms of there was reference to traffic flows and not having received response initially made by Dr. Robinson at CPRE. And I think that was a point that was being echoed by Mr. Wimberley. As I understand it, sir, that relates to an assessment that predated the assessment that was undertaken for the scheme that's before you. And then, of course, the assessment that has been done for this scheme reflects the proper changes to the design and et cetera that were brought forward in that intervening period. Insofar as responding to the points directly though, I think the point is on the timetable, we were looking to provide that response by deadline 4. I think you'll recall you kindly gave us the option to respond by deadline 3 or deadline 4 because there was quite a bit of material coming in at that point in the examination. So that is one of the responses we'll be dealing with at deadline 4.
And it will particularly address the points that CPRE and Mr. Wimbley have raised around the modelling.
Yes, we will explain those. As I say, in essence, in short form now, I understand that's because it relates to an assessment, what they're referring to relates to an assessment that was prior to this scheme coming forward.
Okay, thank you.
And then finally, sir, sorry, there was one more. There was obviously Mrs. Hellam, just at Share My First Journey to School, had asked about mitigation. And I think as you started to pick up on, sir, in this instance, because the applicant's assessments conclude that there is no significant effect, that there is no mitigation being proposed.
Okay. So, Ms. Hallam, you may want to reflect on that, and perhaps make another submission on that basis. So, if it's felt that some mitigation is required, perhaps that could be spelt out a little more.
With respect, the previous speaker said.
Excuse me, I told you that
I said something and I didn't say it. He said that I said that I would do a study on the health implications in relation to air pollution and put it in the next deadline. I did not say that. I suggested that Highways England should do that.
Thank you. So, Mr. Wimbley, let me just be clear about what you're offering to do. So, are you intending or not intending to look at, to make a submission on the relationship between air pollution and health locally?
I have looked for the Witten Short study and I can't find it, but I know there are other sources such as Marmot and the ONS and Public Health England, but it is not my job to trawl through all that. And frankly, I have lots of other things to write about as well, which are more sort of, you know, that I'm more capable of writing about. And I do think that it should be in the ES. And Mr. Thurling claimed that they were in the ES. I do not believe they are. I will cover that aspect of the inadequacy of the information.
Thank you, Mr. Wimbley. Thank you. That's very clear. Can I just I just pick up that point? If the applicant, in its response at deadline 5, so having reviewed Mr. Wimbley's submission at deadline 4, other responses at deadline 4, if the applicant could please consider the point and maybe it could be signposting, but could set out how it has considered the effect of the proposed development on air pollution and health related to changes to air pollution, if that could be addressed at deadline 5, please, by the applicant.
Thank you, sir. That's understood. We can do that, sir. I'm very clear on what my note was. But thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's take that as a way forward. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Wimbley. Right, I think we're now going to wrap up on air quality. Thank you for that. Some quite tricky issues for us to work through. I think I was earlier suggesting that, and just bear with me a moment. Share First My Journey to School. There has been some discussion during this week about the concerns that have been raised by Carol Hallam about potential issues in the areas that she's mentioned. I think related to that was an invitation for an accompanied site inspection. I just want to reiterate a request we made earlier in the week. So if there are parties considering that it would be beneficial for us to visit a location, then please could those be set out in terms of the location, the reasons for us visiting a location, and the time of day where that visit would be most appropriate in the view of different parties. And I think two or three perhaps parties have raised some suggestions around that, but if we could have those focused on specific location, specific reason for visiting, and specific time of day, then if those could be provided a deadline for, please, we will consider those, and we will consider the need for us to visit, and whether that should be an accompanied inspection or something that we feel could be carried out unaccompanied. But we have considered visits before. We're very happy to go back and reconsider the need to visit again. But it would be helpful to have those points specifically set out by parties. And if that could be provided at deadline four, that would be very helpful. So that's, we made that offer earlier in the week, and that request for assistance with that earlier in the week. So I just wanted to reiterate that point. Thank you for the contributions to that session, and we look forward to further contributions. And are very grateful for the time that people are taking to help us with these matters. The time is now 14:40. We are going to take a short break, that will just be let's say until it's 14:41 now. Let's reconvene at 2:55, so just a 14-minute break. So reconvene at 14:55. If you're watching the live stream, please be aware that the live stream will now stop. To view the restarted meeting, you'll need to refresh your browser page when we restart. Thank you very much.